The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Just getting word now, what appears to be a shooting, maybe multiple shootings in the city of Paris. Police officials there say at least two are dead from an explosion in a bar near Paris Stadium, and separately a shootout in a Paris restaurant.
Gunmen opened fire in a bar in Paris. Two people have now died and seven are wounded.
Because it appears now that it may not just be one location.
At least 11 have been killed in the shootout in the bar in the 10th district of Paris. We understand that a gunman used an automatic gun to open fire there, and people reporting seeing dead bodies in the middle of the street.
We're just getting news now from AP quoting police in Paris, at least 26 dead.
At least 60 people are dead in what clearly is now considered to be a terror attack unfolding in multiple locations in Paris right now.
Complete chaos in all the roads. Police have cordoned off areas. There's no one on the streets apart from officials and obviously press. About 15 minutes ago, have we heard news of this hostage situation in the Bataclan theatre just down the road where there was a rock concert taking place.
60 to 100 hostages being held.
We don't know for sure who is exactly being held hostage. We're assuming audience members. We don't know if it's the group.
To Reuters reporting that it is this operation is over. The two attackers have been killed. Appears too late because the reports are at least 100 people have died in that theatre. And the number of deaths rising as they establish exactly what's happened on the streets of the French capital.
What happened Friday night in Paris is the worst violence that city has seen since World War II. And the big question... The question everyone in Europe and even around the world is now asking is, how will Europe respond? How is Europe going to respond to this attack over the weekend? You probably heard the French president calling this an act of war. He said he wanted the state of emergency in France to last for 3 months. Let me just play for you a short clip from French President François Hollande.
Ce qui s'est produit hier.
What happened yesterday in Paris and Saint-Denis, close to the stadium of
France,
was an act of war.
C'est un acte de guerre. Et face à la guerre... Le pays doit prendre
and
les
faced
décisions
with war,
appropriées.
The country must take appropriate
C'est un acte
decisions.
De guerre qui a été commis par
an act of war was committed by a terrorist
Daesh,
army, Daesh, a jihadist army,
contre la France,
against France,
contre
against
les
the values we defend everywhere in the world.
An act of war by an army against France, against the values that France defends. He added that France will be merciless toward the barbarians of the Islamic State group, and that France will act by all means anywhere, inside or outside the country. Within 24 hours of that attack, that massacre in Paris, those multiple attacks, France sent 10 fighter jets to blast the ISIS-held city of Raqqa, 20 bombs, Now, you compare this, just to try to step back and get a little perspective, if you compare this response coming from France, and it's still early, we're just a couple of days removed from the massacre, but if you compare it to what happened in 2004, that Islamist attack on Madrid, after which Spain basically capitulated to the jihadists. Now they're coming after France for its involvement in the bombing campaigns in Syria. And at this point, it looks like France is not going to capitulate, but that France is going to seek revenge. Quite a few people in France have already taken to the streets in protest against radical Islam. And of course, Europe's lax immigration policies. Quite a few Europeans have already connected this attack to the refugee crisis. At least, as you probably heard, one of the terrorists responsible for these slaughters was a Syrian refugee. Let me just play for you what Nigel Farage, the leader of UKIP here in the UK, what he said back in September, right at the height of the refugee crisis for the UK.
A lot of these Eastern European countries, essentially Eastern European countries, with very strong Roman Catholic churches and traditions, are very concerned about the number of Muslim people. That's not my concern. My concern's far more serious than that. My concern is that ISIS have actually said that they will use the migrant wave to flood Europe with 500,000 of their jihadist fighters. Now, even if that's wrong, even if it's only 5,000, in fact, even if it's only 500, I am very worried about that.
Now, as we saw on Friday night, Farage and others like him, they had good reason to worry. Even 500, even 50, I mean, even if it's 5 or 10, look at the damage that a small group of jihadists can do in a major European city. And so now the pressure mounts on Europe's governments to stand up and to act, to do something, to protect the people of Paris, to protect the people of Europe. You've seen already, even before Friday night, because of the refugee crisis, you've seen the nationalist groups, the anti-immigrant groups all across Europe gaining popularity. This is only going to give those movements more momentum. Let me play you one last clip here from the UK's Channel 4. This is a news report from over the weekend.
It's reported two attackers may have left their version of a calling card, an Egyptian passport found on one body, and near the other, a Syrian passport, which a Greek minister said was used to pass through the Greek island of Leros in October.
To have a person with a French passport being involved in this kind of attack, this is kind of what the security agencies were expecting. If it turns out to be something completely different, something involved, or someone related to the influx of refugees, that could, I mean, almost lead to uncontrollable riots and attacks in European cities.
So if they're going to find out there's any connections, and one of the terrorists already appears to have that connection to the refugee crisis, well, things could just spiral out of control in a hurry. As it's been, I mean, Europe really has no way of separating the jihadis from those that are legitimate refugees. To this point, they haven't even been trying to separate the two. And, of course, ISIS all along has been bragging about the fact that, as Farage said there in that clip, they were going to send 500,000. Things are going to change in Europe. Going back to the big question, how will Europe respond? Poland was the first nation to step up and link these attacks to the refugee crisis. France's National Front Party has demanded the end of the Schengen Agreement, all this free movement within the Union. And then, of course, there's Germany. And we've been talking about Germany quite a lot of late, just with respect to the refugee crisis and the declining popularity of Chancellor Merkel. Notice this from the Washington Post. It says, far-right groups were quick to seize on the Paris terror attack as evidence of a need to curb immigration. While it's the extremists on the far right who are grabbing most of the headlines, mainstream Germans are increasingly being drawn into inflammatory rhetoric and at times anti-foreigner sentiment. These are no longer fringe sentiments. In other words, it says the country's normally staid, some might say dull, political debates have, in particular, become inflamed with vitriol amid the influx of hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers in recent months. Now, we've been telling you just over the last several weeks of how fast things are changing in Germany. And now you have this, November 13th. Paris has had its 9/11. Is this the wake-up call for Europe? How will Europe respond? The Washington Post says mock gallows and chants of lying press at anti-immigrant rallies aren't the only results of the wave of fury sweeping Germany. The steep rise in attacks on refugee shelters, including arson, has garnered the greatest attention abroad, but security officials warn that there appears to be a general willingness emerging in Germany to use violence for political reasons. Previously, educated Germans had been able to tell the difference between neo-Nazi groups and mainstream political opinion. These boundaries are increasingly dissolving, though. This is the Washington Post just telling you about what's happening in Germany. It says Marcus Feldenkirchen, a journalist with the respected weekly Der Spiegel, recently likened the mood in Germany to that of a barroom brawl, recalling how Germany's Weimar Republic descended into fascism. Feldenkirchen said Germans could rightfully be proud of their peaceful post-war democracy, but nobody can be certain that this achievement will be safe forever. It's not just going to go on forever. We can't be certain that it will. This post-war, democratic, multicultural, Brad McDonald, I'll get to his article in just a second. This identity that Europe took on after World War II. Now Europe finds itself in the midst of an identity crisis. And there's much that we can learn from history. Business Insider writes, Bavarian allies cranked up pressure on German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Sunday to reverse her open-door refugee policy, saying the deadly attacks in Paris underline the need for tougher measures to control the influx of migrants. I mean, look, you can see how popular it is, even in the United States, for someone to just speak up about border control, about securing the borders. How popular do you suppose a message like that will be in Germany, in Europe, right now? The article here says Merkel is stuck between a rock and a hard place. According to the Turkish news source, Hürriyet, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said the Paris attacks will not bring about a change to the European Union's stance over the immigration crisis. So the leaders that are currently there, they're digging in their heels, anticipating a debate over a bigger German military role. Top-selling daily, Bild asked, do we now have to go to war? Is that what it's going to take? Stratfor, just the other day, I guess this would be Saturday, says in Germany, Bavarian Prime Minister Horst Seehofer said the Paris attack demonstrates that border controls are more necessary than ever. Seehofer has been very critical of the German government's handling of the refugee crisis, demanding permanent border controls as well as faster repatriation of asylum seekers. The Paris attack will likely strengthen his position and further weaken the government of Chancellor Angela Merkel, which was already facing internal dissent because of the migration crisis. In recent weeks, Germany has seen an increase in anti-immigrant violence, including arson attacks against refugee shelters. The November 13 attacks may encourage more extremist groups across Europe to attack asylum seekers. Well, if you have just a general understanding of history, and then add to that what God prophesies, you can know what's ahead for Europe. You can know how Europe will respond. You can know how Germany will respond. Now, again, think about that identity crisis. I mean, just as a side here, it makes you appreciate the trumpet. Joel Hilliker talked about that Friday, just about how unique that publication is in giving you the news, the breaking news that everyone else misses, that everyone else ignores. Brad McDonald had this article. It's right now in the November-December 2015 Trumpet. We posted it a few weeks ago. And think about what he wrote probably a couple of months ago now, particularly with what's happened in the last 3 days. He was talking about the impact of the refugee crisis, this angle that wasn't getting enough attention. And he said that this was going to impact the identity of Europe. Of course, there's the immense financial cost and the potential infiltration of Islamist terrorists, as he said, the erosion of European culture. But there's something more fundamental and more alarming that's unfolding. This is what he wrote a couple of months ago. He said Europe is experiencing a transformative identity crisis. And then notice what he says here. In the immediate aftermath of World War II, the most destructive conflict in history, the primary goal of Europe's post-war architects was to create a system that would guarantee peace and stability. This meant suppressing past demons and founding a system on more advanced values. Post-war Europe was built to value collaboration and cooperation. It was designed to be enlightened, multicultural, and tolerant. It has positioned itself as the world's moral authority. It abhors war. It defends the environment and human rights. It values international cooperation. The problem is that this is not who Europe is. This is not Europe's DNA. Now you've got to go and read our new book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, to really understand and know the DNA of Europe. He says here, perhaps the greatest effect of the refugee crisis, together with Russia's dramatic resurgence and Europe's rolling financial problems. And then you could add to that now the November 13th attack. Perhaps the greatest effect of all of this is the way it's causing Europe to shed this post-war veneer and return to its past. That's what's happening. That's what will happen. How will Europe respond? It's going to respond by returning to its past. Brad McDonald wrote, being tolerant feels good until hundreds of thousands of foreigners enter your nation and expect you to foot the bill. Being multicultural is wonderful until Muslims waving Islamic State flags and eyeing your teenage daughter settle in your village. Being anti-war feels righteous until Russian tanks roll across the border. Europe is awakening to the fact that the reality is It has a rising beast in the east. It's been infiltrated all across the continent with millions and millions of Muslims. And as Faraj said, even if it's just 5,000, even if it's just 500, what a danger this represents. I think the estimates for the continent are that there were a couple of hundred of Muslims that went and fought in Syria and have since returned to Europe. And you've probably heard the figures about the UK. It's even more than that. Some 500, 600, 700 that have fought in Syria with ISIS and have since returned to the UK. Where will the next target be? Will it be in France again? We're not even that far removed from the attacks on Charlie Hebdo back in January, and now November 13th. Where's the next target? Will it be in the UK? Will it be in Germany? Now, I want you to compare, again, just to give you a greater appreciation for what you receive at thetrumpet.com. You think about what Brad McDonald wrote there. We posted it a few weeks ago with what Peter Foster just wrote at the Telegraph over the weekend. He said, the Paris attacks put the dagger through the heart of liberal Europe. This is the Daily Telegraph. He said, the attacks threaten viability of Schengen agreement and the vision of tolerant, multicultural society that is the essence of Europe. It's as if he has been reading the Trumpet. He writes, the Paris attacks that killed at least 128 people on Saturday night, Friday night, and into Saturday morning, will put renewed pressure on Europe. Schengen agreement, and threaten the very essence of the European way of life as far-right parties seek to capitalize on the attacks. That's what analysts are now warning. With Paris now enduring this second major terror bloodbath in under a year, questions are now being asked about how much longer both Europe's open border system and vision of a tolerant, multicultural society can survive. How much longer can this survive? This post-war identity, which really goes contrary to Europe's historical DNA. Foster says, designed to facilitate the free movement of goods and labor, that is the economic lifeblood of the continent, the Schengen system has also enabled the easy transfer of both weapons and potentially jihadist fighters across the same borders. Following the attacks, François Hollande, the French president, also reimposed border controls in a bid to ensure that none of the Paris terrorists or their support network in France were able to escape. As occurred after the Charlie Hebdo atrocity. It says even before the Paris attacks, Donald Tusk, the EU president, had warned that Europe faced a race against time to save the 20-year-old system, which is seen as one of the Union's most concrete achievements. This was a great achievement 20 years ago. And now things they're going to have to change. It says the security risks posed by open borders were highlighted by both the Charlie Hebdo attack and the botched Talis train attack earlier this year, when in both cases the weapons used in France had been smuggled in from Belgium. There have been quite a few reports today of raids on terrorists or on Muslims in, I forget the name of the Belgium city, which is just a hotbed for extremist views, right there in the heart of Belgium. Peter Foster says, continental Europe is reportedly awash with automatic firearms originating from the Balkan Wars of the 1990s and the collapse of the former Soviet Union. Belgium, a country with a population of 11 million, has around 900,000 firearms in circulation. 900,000 firearms in circulation. It's easy to pick at the United States for all of the guns, and there's lots of them. But Europe has a lot of guns, too, because of the Balkan Wars, because of the fall of the Soviet Union. They're there. And France and other nations might have strict gun laws, but that doesn't mean that terrorists can't access guns, firearms. They're getting them, as we saw on Friday night. 11 million people in Belgium, a tiny little nation with, I guess one firearm for about every 10 or 11 people. How is this problem going to be solved? How will this be resolved? Well, it's all building, isn't it? You know. If you've been reading The Trumpet, if you've been following our broadcast, you know that this is building to the last crusade. One more crusade before the return of Jesus Christ. One more spectacular religious clash before the return of Jesus Christ. We'll talk more about that after the break. You're listening to The Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. The live stream can be picked up at kpcg.fm on the internet. Email us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We will be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
And so the massacre on Friday brings us one massive step closer to the fulfillment of a prophecy in Daniel chapter 11. Get your Bible, read along with me. We'll go through some of those verses here in just a moment. First, I want to read to you what George Friedman wrote earlier this year following the attack on Charlie Hebdo. This is from Stratfor.com. He said, "But while the Europeans have particular issues with Islam and have had them for more than 1,000 years, this is important history. This is about Europe's roots, or as Mr. McDonald writes, the DNA. There is a more generalizable problem, it says. Christianity has been sapped of its evangelical zeal and no longer uses the sword to kill and convert its enemies. At least parts of Islam retain that zeal. And saying that not all Muslims share this vision does not solve the problem. Enough Muslims share that fervency to endanger the lives of those they despise, and this tendency toward violence cannot be tolerated by either their Western targets or by Muslims who refuse to subscribe to a jihadist ideology. And there's no way to distinguish those who might kill from those who won't. The Muslim community might be able to make this distinction, but a 25-year-old European or American policeman cannot. And the Muslims either can't or won't police themselves. Therefore, we are left in a state of war." French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has called this a war on radical Islam. If only they wore uniforms or bore distinctive birthmarks, then fighting only the radical Islamists would not be a problem. But Valls' distinctions, notwithstanding, the world can either accept periodic attacks or see the entire Muslim community as a potential threat until proven otherwise. He says, this is Friedman writing, "These are terrible choices, but history's filled with them." These are terrible choices. But history is filled with these kinds of choices, these kinds of decisions that must be made. You can see why that this will build. It suits radical Islam's purposes for Europe to see this as a problem with Islam in general, because it's going to alienate those within Europe that aren't extremist in their views. Friedman says Europe's sense of nation is rooted in shared history, language, ethnicity, and yes, in Christianity, or its air secularism. Europe has no concept of the nation except for these things, and Muslims share in none of them. It's difficult to imagine another outcome, save for another round of ghettoization and deportation. In other words, he's talking about, and this is the title of his piece, a war between two worlds, a clash of civilizations, a religious war. This is repulsive, it says, to the European sensibility now. Here again, think of the identity crisis, but certainly not alien to European history. You got to go back to history to understand what's going to happen. History is repeating itself. Unable to distinguish radical Muslims from other Muslims, Europe will increasingly and unintentionally move in this direction. It's inevitable. Paradoxically, this will be exactly what the radical Muslims want because it will strengthen their position in the Islamic world in general, and North Africa and Turkey in particular. But the alternative to not strengthening the radical Islamists is living with the threat of death if they are offended. And that is not going to be endured in Europe. And so he says at the end of his piece, we're entering a place that has no solutions. Such a place does have decisions. And all of the choices will be bad. All of the choices will be bad. This is where we now are. Pope Francis said over the weekend that this massacre in Paris is just the latest in what he considers to be a piecemeal World War III. He believes we're already in the midst of World War III and that it's happening in little bits like what we've seen this past Friday night. Do you think the Vatican is taking note of what's happening in Europe? Do you think the Vatican notices when entire Christian communities in the Middle East are wiped out in a systematic kind of genocide? What has been the history? How has the Vatican typically responded to these kinds of threats? In the King of the South booklet, you should look at that. This is the booklet my father wrote years ago. Chapter 3 in that book is titled The Last Crusade. Go back and read that chapter. That article, it was originally an article that we printed in the Trumpet in 2001, 14 years ago. The Last Crusade. Now, as Friedman alludes to there, of course, Brad McDonald in his piece, if you just know a little bit of the history, then you'll understand that this is not going to be anything new, this clash. This clash between the Roman Catholic system and radical Islam. I mean, these kinds of clashes have fueled some of the bloodiest battles in history. Some of that's recounted in the King of the South. Also in the new booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, going back to the 11th, the 12th century, Pope Urban II in particular, who unleashed a savage Catholic army on a crusade, a righteous army that had its sights set on the Holy Land. Let me read to you what Terry Jones and Alan Herrera wrote in the book, Crusades. By summoning an army under the banner of the cross, the Pope was extending the Church's mantle over all Christendom. This was the idea at the very heart of the revolutionary papacy. In place of separate local churches at the center of discrete communities, there was to be one overarching church ruled by one overarching Pope. The crusade was to be its expression and its instrument. And so you have this one overarching church in Europe. going into, in this case, Jerusalem. And then, of course, as the history played out, you have the Islamists that would strike back. And rivers of blood as a result. Daniel chapter 11. Let's read here about the last crusade. It says, and at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him. That's the king of the south. Radical Islam. Iran is the head of it, the head of the snake. The king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north, that's the European beast power, the German-led European Union, the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships and shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. So God says there's going to be a clash in this end time between the kings of the north and south. These are the same two forces that were pitted against each other during the Crusades, Catholic Europe and radical Islam. A war between two worlds, as George Friedman wrote earlier this year. A war between two worlds. Your Bible says the Islamic forces will aggressively push at Europe. Are you beginning to see that happen? Are you seeing these forces push into Europe? Isn't it interesting to you, these first major strikes? They're aimed at Europe. The one at Charlie Hebdo, well, I guess more specifically, the ones coming from ISIS. Of course, the United States was pounded as well back in 2001. But now you see Europe being pushed and pushed and pushed. And as my father's brought out before, this verse, verse 40, you don't see the United States even mentioned there. It's not even part of this clash. They'll be so weak, as my father has said, by this point. It's left to Europe. It's left to Germany to deal with the problem. You know the U.S. isn't going to stand up, certainly not under its current leadership. What was it, just 8-9 hours before those attacks Friday night when President Obama was talking about how ISIS has been contained. Before that, ISIS was the JV team. Before that, Al-Qaeda was on the run. How blind do you have to be to not see the King of the South gaining momentum? Now it pushes and pushes and pushes. And eventually, we're here to tell you, Europe will respond. And we're talking about some kind of response. Don't listen to those that say this is the death of Europe. Don't listen to those that say, well, the leaders in Europe are just like the leaders in the United States. There perhaps are some in positions of power right now in Europe that follow some of the same principles or same policies of the liberal left. But look at how unpopular they are. Look at the sentiment. Look at the reaction to what happened Friday night. Look at what's building in Germany. You can no longer make a sharp distinction between the angry rhetoric on the far right and those right in the midst of the mainstream. And look at how fast it's all changed in just a matter of months. Here's what my father wrote in 2004. This is 11 years ago. And he's saying then, just 20 years ago, nobody could have imagined two world powers coming out of the Middle East and Europe. But God knew exactly what would happen. Nobody but God could have inspired these prophecies. Everybody can see these two great powers today. He's saying that in 2004. In fact, we were saying it back in 1994 when we talked about Iraq falling to the king of the South. When we talked about radical Islam pushing Europe. Only God could have known. Just look at what's happening in Europe, it says, and has been for years. Pope John Paul II has worked feverishly to revive the Holy Roman Empire. Early in his pontificate in Spain, November 9th, 1981, he said this. This is going back to 1981, what Pope John Paul II said. It can be said that the European identity is not understandable without Christianity, and that it is precisely in Christianity that are found those common roots by which the continent has seen its civilization mature, its culture, its dynamism, its activity, its capacity for constructive expansion in other continents as well. In a word, all that makes up its glory. Find yourself again, this Pope said. Be yourself. Discover your origins. Revive your roots. Return to those authentic values which made your history a glorious one and your presence so beneficent in the other continents. Find those roots. Europe's about to find its roots. And you can read all about it in the Holy Roman Empire and prophecy. Read about the roots of Justinian. Read about the roots of Charlemagne, of Otto the Great, of the Habsburg dynasty, of Napoleon, of the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire during the World War II era. Read about it and see what's coming. History is repeating itself. And more important still, your Bible tells us a clash is coming between two kings, the kings of the north and the king of the south. Verse 41 says, this is Daniel 11, he shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Many countries are going to be overthrown. This is in the Middle East. God says, you watch. You watch what happens around Jerusalem. You watch what happens in the Middle East. And today, it's easy to fix our sights on what's happening in the continent of Europe. I mean, look, ISIS has said it straight up. We're going to send in terrorists in and among the refugees. And we want to conquer Rome. We want to go after Rome. We want to go after Europe. So you see the stage being set for this clash. The push, the push, the push. And then the whirlwind. Verse 42, he shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So that's how we know Egypt's going to swing into the Islamist camp as well, because they're going to be smashed too. But he shall have power over the treasures of the gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. Entire Muslim nations are going to be caught up in this, as well as the nations of Europe. And then too, the kings of the east, verse 44, but tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. You see where this trigger is taking us. Tidings of the east is talking about the Orient, Russia, these kings of the east, these Asiatic hordes, and the war between these powers and the European beast power. And verse 45 says, he'll plant, speaking of the beast power, he'll plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. This is how we know. This is how we know there's one last crusade coming. One more crusade. One more great religious war One more holy war. A World War III. It's not going to be piecemeal by this point. This massacre in Paris and others like them that are soon to follow. You can feel it building to this coming religious war between Europe and radical Islam. And we can be thankful that God will intervene. Matthew 24, verses 21 through 22 tell us that. God will intervene to save us from ourselves. It says that. Or at least it says words to that effect here in this next chapter. Notice how the book of Daniel ends. Verse 1, it says, "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which stands for the children of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. Never anything like this." Just like Jesus said in Matthew 24, just like the prophet Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 30. It's all through the Bible. It's not some bizarre interpretation of what the Bible says. Just look at what the Bible says. There's never been a time like this. Later on, it talks about those who are blessed for waiting on God, for looking to God, for looking to the return of Jesus Christ, for responding to God's warning message. Blessed are you, to use the words in verse 12, if you come to the 1,335 days. This chapter is talking about a countdown, basically a countdown to the return of Jesus Christ. We have to keep in mind this hope, this vision of hope, because all that's prophesied to happen before the return of Christ and the establishment of God's government on this earth, all that's prophesied to happen before that, well, it's just going to make those attacks on Friday night seem like a little pinprick. Are you emotionally prepared for what's coming? Are you building godly character? Is your faith growing and strengthening? Are we becoming more obedient to the laws of God? That's how we should respond to these terrifying events. We should always respond in that fashion. Look to God for the answers. Look to God for the solutions. Man will look anywhere else except to God. And so these problems, these evils, these massacres, these tragedies, they continue to worsen. And of course, when it happens in the West, quite a few more of us in the West sit up and take note. But those kinds of things in Paris, they're happening all the time. In other areas of this world, where people in the West aren't really much concerned about. When will it stop? How will it end? Well, it's by God's intervention. It's by God sending His Son back to this earth in power and glory to that glorious holy mountain in Jerusalem. That's the solution. That's what we want to wrap our minds around in times like this. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, and the live stream's available at kpcg.fm. Send us your email, your feedback, anything you'd like to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, the start of another work week. We'll see you again tomorrow.